Welcome to episode 25 of Messing About in Ships for June 5th, 2008. This week we bring you a mariner's perspective, some sea stories, and an internet protocol, and finally some pod safe music. Welcome to episode 25 of Messing About in Ships for June 5th, 2008. I'm Peter Mello from SeaFever.org, and my podcasting partner is Captain John Conrad from GCaptain.com. Hey, John, how's it going?
Good evening, Peter. I'm doing good. Yourself?
I'm doing really well, thanks, too. What's new on the West Coast there?
Not too much here. Just enjoying the first days of summer. Yourself?
Yes, actually I just got back from Bermuda, and yesterday at least it was beautiful, 80 degrees here, which is pretty warm for this time of year in Massachusetts. It's actually warmer than Bermuda. Today's a little rainy, but typical spring day, so good for the flowers.
Great.
You got any news, G-Captain news, or anything else going on?
Yeah, we got the final redesign for our magazine transition, which I've been talking about for, it seems like, ages. Finally completed, and we're going to go into alpha testing next week, and should be live in about 2 weeks for the general public.
Excellent. Look forward to seeing that. I look forward to seeing that. Do you have any new authors coming aboard?
No new authors just yet. We're talking to a few people, but the big thing is different sections. We're going to have an incident reporter section and a section for the offshore industry, and then kind of just a general interest for people just visiting off the internet. They want to see pictures of cool ships. So we're going to break it down into the various elements, and we'll start doing a lot more posts. We hired our first full-time employee. And we moved into our new office, which is really nice. We're going to take some video, give you a tour of G-Captain's new offices, and let you meet Mike Schuler, our new employee.
Wow. What's he do?
He is working on some of the web development until we get a venture capitalist to give us a substantial amount of money. We have to pay the bills. And we're doing that through web development, designing websites for shipping companies and other companies with a maritime feel. We're kind of acting like a translator between the techie world and the maritime industry, building websites.
Good.
So he's helping with that, and doing a few other side projects, kind of take the load off of me and some of the rest of the G-Captain team. So.
Very cool. Good luck.
Excited to have him.
Congratulations. Sounds good. So this week we have Captain Kelly Sweeney with his Mariner's Perspective. So let's listen and hear what he has to say.
Ahoy, shipmates. This is Captain Kelly Sweeney with another Mariner's Perspective on Messing About in Ships podcast. Last week I talked about short sea shipping and led into the Jones Act. As I said last week, in 2006 I was the only actively sailing mariner and one of the panelists at the North American Short Sea Shipping Conference in Vancouver, BC. I made it clear then that although I support the expansion of short sea shipping, I do not support it at the expense of the Jones Act. Many countries in the world have cabotage laws designed to protect their air and sea trade routes. And in the U.S., we have trade cabotage laws also. The main one for maritime is called the Jones Act. Officially known as the Shipping Act of 1920, it was enacted to prevent the mistreatment of merchant mariners, something which was commonplace in those days, and to protect our country's vital shipping and shipbuilding interests. The Jones Act requires cargo bound from one U.S. port to another to be carried on U.S. flagged ships built in U.S. shipyards. Vessels which abide by high construction and operating standards enforced by our country. At the conference, I made it clear that I strongly oppose weakening the Jones Act to allow foreign vessels and shipping companies on our domestic short-sea shipping routes. I'm a firm believer in the Jones Act because it helps protect shipyards, mariners, and shipping companies. Its economic and national security benefits to our country are tremendous. U.S. shipyards bring billions of dollars into our economy and keep the domestic fleet strong. Unlike foreign sailors, U.S. merchant mariners undergo extensive training and background checks, like the TWIC card. And when plying the waters along America's marine highway, they are always on the lookout to keep our coasts, Great Lakes, and rivers safe. U.S. shipping companies in the Jones Act trade add billions of dollars to our economy by owning and operating U.S. flag vessels. From my perspective as an actively sailing merchant mariner, increasing short-sea shipping is a worthy goal, but not at the expense of the Jones Act. And I will always add my voice to support the Jones Act whenever and wherever asked, without hesitation. Thank you, shipmates. Until next time, I wish you all smooth sailing. This is Captain Kelly Sweeney with another Mariner's Perspective.
All right. Thank you, Captain Kelly, for that interesting comment. We're excited about his maritime headhunters business, where he's going to find jobs for maritime officers. So if you're looking for a job, give him a call. If not, wait till next week, where we have a surprise announcement.
Well, it won't really be a surprise now, will it?
No.
Anyway, we cheer up, man. Anyway, we have no comments this week, but we did have somebody plot themselves on the listener chart. She is from Bergen, Norway. They didn't really give us a name or any other information, but they did put a picture of a ship up there, which is kind of cool. So check it out, and thank you for listening, and thank you for plotting yourself on that chart. We're going to jump right into our sea stories this week. And John, what do you got?
I have a post I wrote for G Captain a few months ago, but it's kind of got renewed interest. There's our forum, which is really taking off lately. We've had a half dozen new subscribers a day on G Captain's forum. But there's a post about the Asphalt Commander, and the ship has let's say a few interesting nicknames. But it's best known for being the lowest-paid ship in the MMP Union, and it's also a working ship. And as you could guess from its name, the Asphalt Commander, it carries asphalt, which is an interesting cargo. I haven't been on that particular ship, but a lot of the asphalt ships, they have to keep the cargo really hot in order to let the asphalt move through pipes, so heating systems inside the deck, and it's one of those ships you actually have to wear clogs out on deck so your soles of your boots don't melt. The Asphalt Commander is best known for being a rust bucket, quite frankly, and the comments are very interesting. It brings me back to this post I wrote a few months ago, 10 reasons to go sail a rust bucket, one of these really rusting ships that's a working ship. The Asphalt Commander has since been scrapped, so you lost that opportunity. But there are many others like it out there. I've run through kind of 10 reasons why, as a young cadet, you'd want to pick one of these gigs first. And as you know, all the cadets are scammering about for the best jobs, and the best jobs usually go to the guys with the top GPAs. I wasn't one of those when I graduated Fort Schuyler, and I did end up on a rust bucket, not right away. And I look at it as a valuable experience for a few reasons. Number 10 was a learning experience. It said, sure, the new vessel management and integrated bridge system sound impressive, but captains are not looking for a mate that knows what buttons to press on a console. They're looking for someone who can think through what happens when the buttons are pressed. A year studying manuals is simply not as effective as months spent out on deck tracing cargo lines, turning valves. and rebuilding equipment. There are 9 other reasons from management skills. A chief mate is only as good as his crew. On the rusting rover, undermanned and in poor condition, even the simplest jobs can quickly become an all-hands event, with mates and seamen doing the jobs together. Working closely with the crew lets you learn what makes them tick, knowledge that will serve you well later in your career. You can't get this knowledge in a control room. And next one was networking, that the Rust Bucket's been around for a while, so a lot of the people who moved up in the company have stories that they can share with you at company events. Hard work getting recognized. Everyone's impressed by the fact that you were on the ship and really put your time in. World travel. The best ships are usually on constant runs in between liner runs, one port to another, where a lot of these rust buckets are caught on tramp routes where they travel the world and go to a varying selection of ports. And then I talk a little bit about failure and how failure is the best learning device. And on a ship that old, equipment's going to fail, people are going to fail, and you'll learn from that. That meeting new people and getting out there and being on the worst ship early in your career means that everything is going to look rosy and grand when you get on the gem of the fleet. Where if someone in the company starts on the gem of the fleet and then goes to Rust Bucket, there's a lot more reason for complaint.
Wow. What was number one?
Number one was meeting new people. No one stays longer than they have to aboard the MV Bucket of Rust. Among the qualified or inept people hired off the street to the fleet's best captain who asked to do one hitch as a company favor, the number of short service employees is going to be highest on the worst ship. For better or worse, each person who passes through your ship will have a lesson to teach, even if the next captain's only purpose in life is to serve as a warning to others.
Wow, you can make lemonade out of lemons. That's pretty good. I like that. I love top 10 lists or 10 lists like that. So that's pretty cool. But I'm sure you have plenty of sea stories to tell about your experience.
Yeah. It was a great experience, and I've actually been on 2 such vessels, and both were both really made me what I am today. So if your GPA is not the highest in the class as a cadet, don't get down about yourself. There are a lot of opportunities out there.
Great. Good thing. You can meet a lot of people, as you've shared with us. So that's always good.
Regular listeners of Messing About in Ships will know that John and I are dads, fairly young children. I have a 3-year-old and a 5-year-old, and John has a 2-year-old and one just a couple months old. And as will happen on occasion, he got called away to baby duty. So you are now in my capable hands. So the podcast will probably be a little shorter than usual, but I'm sure John will be back next week, and we'll get right back into it. My sea story this week is an update on a project that I've been working on for the Northeast Maritime Institute. In case you're not familiar, Northeast Maritime Institute is a maritime training and education organization located in Fairhaven, Massachusetts. And this project I'm working on is in Bermuda. It's called the Bermuda MATE Program. It's MATE and stands for Maritime Apprentice Training and Education Program. And it's a program designed for some young people who have basically dropped out of the traditional education system and have an interest, though, in pursuing a maritime career. Many of these young people have GED degrees or are on their way to accomplishing their GED. And they've been selected or identified by the Bermuda Sloop Foundation, which is a sail training organization in Bermuda that owns and operates the Spirit of Bermuda, which is a Bermuda sloop. The executive director there is Malcolm Kirkland, and the captain is Captain Chris Blake. Actually, Captain Blake, I think, is leaving this week. But he's been there since the inception of the program a number of years ago. And the Bermuda Sloop Foundation has recently won 2 international awards, one from the American Sail Training Association for Sail Training Program of the Year, and another award from Sail Training International in the UK, which is a global body of global authority of sail training. The young people that we're working with have been through the program there to various degrees. A number of them have pretty extensive experience sailing on the Spirit of Bermuda. Many have gone transatlantic. And some of the young people have other maritime experiences. One young man has circumnavigated the globe on the Concordia. He's also sailed on the Europa and the Gorsch Fock. And another young man has pretty extensive experience on a liner, the Oleander, that's goes between, I believe it's New York and Bermuda every week. So we have a wide range. They go from 16 up to the age of 30. One young woman, and the rest are all young men. So there's 11 in total. We had hoped to have 12, but we had one drop out along the way, so we're at 11. We launched the program this Monday. Captain Sue McDonald is our lead instructor on the program, and she and I went down to Bermuda. I'm back, but she's down there for 3 weeks, and during that time period, she's going to be teaching first aid and CPR, STCW compliant first aid and CPR, and also an able-bodied seaman course, U.S. Coast Guard approved. After those two courses are done, the young people will get aboard the Spirit of Bermuda and sail to Fairhaven, Massachusetts. That should take about 4 or 5 days. And when they get there, they'll be engaged in a 9-week program. Much of it is STCW courses, basic firefighting all the way up through bridge resource management and some other U.S. Coast Guard approved courses. At the end of it, they'll have a certificate of competency or the ability, basically ratings, to go and get an entry-level position on board a ship. When they're done with us, actually, we're going to find them apprenticeship or cadetship opportunities on international ships that serve the international trade. Some of them may choose to stay in Bermuda and work for Marine and Ports or some of the other local operators. So the program got underway on Monday, like I said. The enthusiasm, involvement, and actually performance in the first few days. The test scores were really high in both the first 2 days, higher than we probably expected. And, you know, I showed up the second day, and there were some young people waiting outside before class started, and I said, "Hey, how's it going?" One young guy said, "Hey, look, I've never taken notes in class ever before." And he opened up a notebook, and he had about 10 pages of notes in there. Pretty proud of that. And then a little later in that day, I got emails from a couple different mothers of these young guys, and they're accomplishing something. They're very engaged and interesting, and it was just fantastic to get the feedback from parents and also from the professionals at our partner facility, the Adult Education School in Bermuda. So it's I'll try to give fairly frequent updates here how the program's going, and that's about it on the program. But I did have a few minutes to see a little bit of Bermuda. Most of my trips, I've been there 5 times this year, have been really focused on getting this program underway. And this week I had the opportunity to actually go to the Bermuda Maritime Museum because I had a lunch over at the dockyard. So I took a couple hours and toured the Bermuda Maritime Museum, and I got to tell you, it is a fantastic museum, and I highly recommend it to anybody who travels to Bermuda. The website says, "Explore 500 years of local history and culture displayed in military buildings on the 6-acre keep citadel, including the award-winning restored commissioner's house, bastions, cannons, shipwreck artifacts, local watercraft, maritime art, spectacular sea views, and dolphin encounters are all found in Bermuda's largest fort." Well, it is Bermuda, so there ain't too many spots where you can't see the ocean, but the views from this place are just absolutely spectacular. The architecture of the fort is just absolutely, you know, really quite cool. All kinds of buildings, and the centerpiece is the commissioner's house, which has been restored. It's a beautiful, beautiful museum that has some very educational and interesting and entertaining exhibits. A couple that just come to mind is one about slavery and shipping in Bermuda, another one about Portuguese maritime heritage in Bermuda, and then finally the Bermuda race, the Newport to Bermuda race. There's a whole room about that with models and some great photographs, And there's many, many other rooms, and there's some lots of other outbuildings restored, various stages of restoration. Some of them have some exhibits in them. There was one I stumbled upon about the Sea Venture, which was the initial sailing ship that came upon Bermuda and shipwrecked there and was cause for the first colony there. So there's all kinds of things. And then finally, they have a thing called Dolphin Quest there where families can go and basically swim with the dolphins, and that's right within the fort. So it's all quite a destination. I highly recommend it. You won't be disappointed. It's just so much to see. It's be good for kids. There's, you know, lots of artifacts, cannons, and things like that. Just a lot of fun. So anyway, the Bermuda Maritime Museum and the Dockyards of Bermuda. Don't miss it if you go there. I promise you won't be disappointed. He's intrigued by these people who go on these solo expeditions in small boats around the world. And we've covered some of these before. And including Reed Stowe, who's sailing the world alone, now alone. He was initially with a young woman on the schooner Anne. His objective was to be 1,000 days at sea, and actually he's up to 412, I think, right about now. So he's nearly halfway to his objective, although he dropped off his partner there about 100 days ago. And we've also covered Nick, who has his blog, I think his Big Oceans Tiny Boat or Tiny Boat Big Oceans. We'll have a link to it in the show notes. And Nick is a relatively new sailor who's crossing the Atlantic in a fairly small boat. And then on my blog, and I think we've talked about it here before, Messing About in Ships, we've talked about Roz Savage. And Roz Savage is a young British woman who is a rower, who has previously rowed across the Atlantic Ocean. And last fall, I believe it was, she started on an adventure across the Pacific Ocean and basically had equipment failure and hit some very rough weather and had to abandon the effort and be rescued by the Coast Guard. And then there was a saga about recovering her boat, the Brocade, which they finally did. And now she's back at it again. Roz Savage is back underway, so she's off the Pacific coast. You can follow all of her doings over at her blog, Roz Savage's blog, and over there is what she says. Rowing solo across oceans might not be everybody's idea of a dream, but Roz Savage decided she'd have enough of conventional London existence and wanted to do something special with her life. So in her mid-30s, she quit her job and bought a rowboat. Now she uses her adventures to raise awareness of environmental issues and inspire others to rise to their own challenges, no matter how big or daunting those challenges may be. So I guess, rowing across the Pacific Ocean is a pretty big and daunting challenge. I certainly, it's tough for me to even put it in perspective. You can follow her on her blog, which she updates very frequently, and I gotta say, that's one of the things I find really intriguing about all these different adventures is that, you know, people are really, we have a look into people's lives and why they do these things and what they're experiencing. And yesterday, a couple days ago, she had a post about how afraid she was. It was called Day 11, Feel the Fear. And there was a picture of her window with a wave crashing over her. The winds were 40 knots. It was steadily building to force 10 conditions. Very, very extreme weather conditions. I think her boat's about 23 feet. It's a rowboat. So, you know, it's definitely pushing, I think, mankind to its limit to engage in these types of things. The most recent post is one that probably is worth a quick look and discussion here, or read here. It's Day 12, Frequently Asked Question Number 1, Why? And let me just read a little bit of it. Why do I do what I do? Why, having had a life of relative ease, comfort, and affluence, have I now chosen to put gray hairs on the head of a poor, long-suffering mother by rowing alone across oceans? It's a good question. So I'll try to give a good answer. By 2004, I had figured out that money wasn't everything, that maybe who I was mattered more than what I owned. So I had already quit the office job and was looking around for something more fulfilling. And for me, fulfilling had to involve making a contribution to the greater good. I was doing a lot of reading about philosophy and religion, was especially influenced by the prophecies of the Hopi tribe, which foretold dramatic consequences if ever human lost touch with their spiritual life and started to overexploit the resources of the planet rather than living in harmony with nature. This made intuitive sense to me, and I resolved to live my own life in a more spiritual, less environmentally damaging way. When I started to live this way, it felt good. I thought maybe I should spread the word, not in a preachy way, but just by making my life an example, showing that there was a viable and enjoyable alternative to the materialistic kind of life that I had been living before. I toyed with several ideas, setting up an organic coffee shop, riding a motorcycle across the American Southwest to write a book about the native culture, converting a tugboat to a liveaboard home using only sustainable energies, but none had seemed quite right or required more money than I had. I hadn't been particularly looking for a big adventure, but when the idea of rowing across oceans came to me in a flash of inspiration one day, I just knew with a scary certainty that it was a perfect project. Believe me, I tried to talk myself out of it. I thought it was too big, too ambitious, that people like me just didn't do things like that, but the idea refused to go away until I had no choice but to do it or spend the rest of my life thinking if only. So here I am, age 40, homeless and usually penniless, bobbing around in a tiny rowboat, about to be hit by a force 10 gale. Interesting choice, but I wouldn't have it any other way. And she goes on to write some other stuff here. This morning I recorded another podcast with a renowned TV radio journalist and podcaster, Leo Laporte. Do check them out if you haven't already. I can't see my website from the ocean. I have email but no internet browsing, so I can't tell you exactly where to find the podcast, but hopefully they are fairly evident. Today I squirted the water maker liberally with WD-40 according to a suggestion from Spectra, the manufacturers. It ran okay for about a half an hour and then stopped again. The pressure seemed rather low and the tone of the pump sounded rather feeble. It's still a major cause of concern, although now at least the bag bomb seemed to be stopping the compartment from flooding again. The weather was quite pleasant for most of today, sunny, although the wind was still too strong to row against. But in the last couple of hours there has been a marked deterioration. The skies are now heavy and gray and the waves are getting larger. Is this the big one? I am bracing myself. ... So you get an idea of what she talks about, what she writes about. Previous posts I mentioned, Day 11, Feel the Fear. Actually, in that one, I think she talks about the fact that she doesn't love the ocean. In fact, she's doing this for other personal reasons, not like she has this real passion about the ocean. So the other interesting thing for me with all of these ocean or all these adventures is that using social media can, as I said earlier, you can kind of give us a glimpse into her life, but it also goes in the other direction. Her blog has a ton of posts. I mean, the post I just read has 25 comments. Many are 25, 50 comments or more, and it's just interesting that she has a regular readership, and she, you know, it really gets people engaged and involved in her adventure. Last year when she was going through it, you know, it was just fascinating to see that people were so living their lives vicariously through hers. So hat tip to Roz Savage here for letting us have a glimpse into this incredible adventure of hers. The web address is, let me see what we have here, www.rozsavage.com/blog. But if you just go to rozsavage.com, and that's rozsavage.com, it'll take you to her basically her website that has a link to a blog. The other cool thing with it is she has a tracker, marine track. You can see exactly where she is and what speed she's making and so on. So it's a very cool website. You can also make a donation to her if you think that what she's doing is worthwhile and you're getting something out of it. And anyway, it's rosssavage.com. Hope you enjoy it. This week's music comes to us, as usual, from the PodSafe Music Network, and it's an old classic that I'm sure you'll recognize. It's from James Brown, and it's called Gut Bucket.
Get off.